Session number 27052.
Mr. Bill Franklin, Rio 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Franklin?
Yeah, I was born in 9/10/1926, 9th of October 1926, in Dagenham. I don't know whereabouts in Dagenham, but I was born in Arnold Road, Dagenham, in Essex. Well, it was then Essex. It's now Greater London, I believe.
Now, can you tell us a bit about your family background?
Yeah, well, my father was served in the First World War in the Black Watch. He was one of only three that survived in his company. He was gassed at one time, and he came back and was in hospital, and then went back to France. He did eventually survive the war and was released after the war. I don't know my mother and father's marriage date. I think my brother has all the details of that.
What did your father do after the war?
He was electrical engineer for Telford's, which I believe must have been a meat factory in somewhere. And he died in 1927, at the age of about 37. He died because he was gassed on the French on the front line. He got gassed, mustard gas, which caused him to burn out one lung. So he was living on one lung, which he eventually gave up, and he died at the age of 37, as I said.
How did your mum cope?
My mother was still very young. She was left with seven children. I think my sister was 14. I was the youngest at 1 year old. She might have been a bit younger, my eldest sister. And then eventually she met another gentleman who she took on as a partner. And we moved from Dagenham to Navestock, which is quite local, really, to a cottage in Navestock.
In where?
Navestock, Navestock, and on Navestock Heath. And, I've gone ahead of myself, in actual fact. First of all, we moved to Stapleford Abbots. Yes, moved to Stapleford Abbots. We went into a small holding there, and we lived there until I was 10 years old. And then we then moved to Navestock when I was between 10 and a half. And I went to the local school there, which was a church.
How was your mother managing for money?
Well, her partner, who she had then had, he worked on a farm. But she'd started with a widow's pension, which was, I believe, very, very little money anyway. And but then when she had this partner, she had to give up the pension, because living with someone else, you're not allowed to draw a widow's pension. And we coped. We were very, very poor and very. And then eventually, when I went to Navestock School.
Was it a happy childhood, would you say?
I was never really unhappy, sad. Sometimes I felt hungry, sometimes it was cold. Because we lived in a very old cottage, which only had an open fire, a big range, you know, the country range. We used to be cold sometimes, you know, but we coped.
What about your education? What schools did you
go to? Well, I only went to a church, Navestock School, until I was 14. It was a Church of England school.
How did you do at school?
It used to be quite well up on what they used to have then. We didn't have the sort of things we have today, GCSEs and all that. They just had we used to have exams, and I used to come third or fourth in the class. I never went lower than that. I always used to get through. I don't know why, because I don't know, I just seem to have an average intelligence, I suppose, that just carried on from
there. Did you have any particular favourite subjects?
Not really. I just liked to read, and that was about it, I think.
Were you interested in sport much?
Yes, I used to like playing football, and we used to play the school. We used to play cricket amongst ourselves, you know, like the class used to play, the older boys, we used to. Well, my head teacher, his name Wright, William Wright. And he was a wonderful old boy. He was a really old type of teacher, you know. If you did something wrong, he'd throw a duster at you, you know, one of the ball rubbers at you or something like that, you know. If he was talking too much, which I very often used to have to duck because it used to be coming my way. And one of the biggest problems I had when I was at school was the sounding my H's. Always had that. So he found a method to make me sound the H's by sticking a pencil in my mouth.
Across, yeah.
Yeah, across your mouth. And he found that made you sound your H's. The trouble is, eventually, I used to call the letter H instead of H. Instead of pronouncing it in a word, one would have. But eventually I learned differently and carried on otherwise.
Did you have any big hobbies?
No, we used to just, all the boys of the village, we used to do things like, before I left school, we used to do things like play. The teachers used to read to you at that time. We used to read books, and we used to have books about Robin Hood and all that sort of thing, you know, which we used to listen to quite intently. And we would play Robin Hood and make dens, and the boys at the top of the village would versus the boys down the bottom of the village, you know, and that sort of thing, you know. I did get shot in the knee with an arrow once, which caused a problem. But apart from that, we used to just wander around the village. We used to go and wander around the farms. And
you weren't in the Boy Scouts or anything? No,
they did have a scout movement in Brentwood, but I did join the Sea Cadets for a couple of days, and then that I didn't find it very interesting, and so I didn't bother to go again.
Now, were you still at school when the war broke out?
Yes. I mean,
what do you remember of the outbreak of war? How did that affect
Well, I remember the teacher. I remember Neville Chamberlain coming back, our head teacher, telling us, old Billy Wright, as we used to call him, old Billy Wright. He'd telling us that the old war is not coming, so he gave us all a penny each because he was so pleased that there wasn't going to be a war. But of course it did happen, didn't it? I mean, we did have a war, but he gave us all a penny each. And
what do you remember about the day war broke? Did break out the 3rd of September?
Did you
hear the broadcast?
Yes, I remember the broadcast. We used to have one of those radios where you have a battery and an accumulator. And it was on a swivel, so you could. We used to hear the speeches through that. Used to watch, listen, and watch. Used to listen to all the old programs, you know.
What did you think about the Declaration of War? You were only, 4 to 13?
War to... To me, was some sort of excitement because we used to watch the Battle of Britain. We used to watch.
Hang on, that's after the war started. I mean, how did you think about it when you heard the war had started?
It didn't register, not with us youngsters, I don't think, that it meant very much, except that not having a father who had to go back into war, or my mother's. New partner, he He worked on a farm, actually, so he wasn't... he was in a, what they called a reserved occupation. So he continued on the farm, so he never went to war.
And was there any question of you being evacuated, or were you leaving school?
Oh, no, anyway? We had evacuees come to us at Navestock. We had quite a lot of evacuees come to Navestock and stayed in the farms and the vicarage.
Now, how were they received in your community? I mean, tell us about that.
Well, we got on quite well. And wool ladies, although to us they were townies, I thought they knew a bit better than us country yokels. But I still now today realise that I think we were just as clever as they were. Really, they were treated very well in the village and looked after very well. We found their way of life was a bit different to ours, being in the town, and our country life was so much different. Although I'd been born in Dagenham, which was a town, I'd moved out of it so quickly. I moved from Dagenham when I was 4 years old, in actual fact, down to Stapford Abbots and then on to Navestock.
Did you make friends with any, or would they be too young for you to be friendly with?
The little villages, the village lads used to more or less stick together. Never had a lot to do with the... We mixed with them, but only didn't actually make great friends of them. And we just mixed with them and accepted them as a part of something that was happening in the village, nothing more.
Do you remember being issued with gas masks?
Oh, yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, they issued with these little square boxes with a gas mask in, and we used to have to try them on in the school, put them on. Almost suffocated you. So.
What were they like to wear? I mean, you wouldn't wear them often, would you? I mean.
Oh no, we only used to put them on for a little while and take them off. But we had to carry them with us all the time, carry them backwards and forwards.
And did you?
Yes, I did carry them most of the time, mostly because my mother made me, and I did whatever my mother told me because my mother was the boss.
Now, did you have any air raid precautions at the start of the war? I'm thinking of, did you have a shelter or anything like that? Or were you seeing...
Oh, what we did, the chap who used to... who we rented the cottages from, we dug a massive hole to the end of the cottages and covered it with corrugated tin and then with earth. And I remember this, the chappy there, his name was Noakes, actually. He made himself a type of telescope out of a milk churn. It's a milk churn. He made a hole in the roof so as he could watch what was going on through this roof. It was quite amusing. We used to all go down the shelter, and we...
So this wasn't an Anderson shelter. This was a homemade shelter.
Homemade shelter. They did supply us all with an Anderson shelter, as they called them. You know, the Anderson shelter.
When did you get that?
Quite soon after the war started. The only trouble is they used to sometimes... You dug a hole in the garden, put them in, and then you filled them in and made your steps down to it. They used to get a bit waterlogged sometimes, you know, if you had heavy rain.
And what was it like in either in your friend's makeshift one, your homemade one, or in the Anderson shelter? What was it like in them?
Well, we found that the one one we made, which was like a communal one for the cottages, there was 11 of these little wooden cottages they were. They've been taken down now. They were about 400 years old. We found the communal one was the best because we used to be able to go down there and have a sing-song and, you know, all the things and act the fool like youngsters do, you know, do different things. And we used to play games and that sort of thing, keep us amused. But we did have a lot of bombs. We had one drop within 50 yards of our cottages, but when it exploded, the cottages just moved back and come upright again because they were all wooden. They were made of, this wood and beams type of thing.
Tell us a bit about the German air raids and what you saw, and the Battle of Britain as well, if you before that probably. But, I mean, what do you remember of that?
Well, quite a lot. We used to, when the air raid siren sounded, if we didn't go down the shelter, we used to all go under the table. We had a big kitchen table. We used to all have to go underneath that. That's where my mother used to push us all. The only person that never went under the table and always went to bed was my brother. He would not go. He would not give up his bed for anybody, and he always went to bed. But the rest of us used to go under the table and stay there until after, you know, the all clear came. We used to get quite a lot of bombs. I mean, the local church had a landmine, blow it up, and we had a V2 drop within a quarter of a mile from us.
That's much later in the
war. That's getting later in the war, towards the end of the war.
Before you went in, you know, I mean, 1940, 1941
was the... I was working on the farm then. I went down...
Stick to the air raids.
Yes, they used to... I should get almost every night we had air raids from 41 right through to... Well, right through the war. My mother was coming down the stairs when a V2 came down, and she fell down the rest of them, broke her leg, and ended up...
But you weren't there then?
No, I was not there at that time. But there again, I've jumped forward, haven't I? But we used to get bombs, oil bombs, incendiary bombs. At one time, just at around 40, late 41, 42... We had a tremendous raid of incendiary bombs, which set hedges, fields, everywhere seemed to be alight, you know, all over the corn. It was said that they were trying to burn all the wheat up, but whether that was true, I don't know. We just heard that sort of thing, that sort of thing you used to hear. And
did you do any voluntary work with the ARP?
No, I wasn't old enough.
Running messages or anything?
No, I am.
So what was your work then? Tell us about you. You left school when? Were you 14?
14, yeah. And we used to just... I used to go over to the farm and wander around, and eventually the farmer said to me, "You're always up here, why don't you... Would you like a job?" And I said, "Well, yes, I don't mind. Give you something to do." And I started... he started paying me to work there, and I started working. I'd even had an insurance card that they put stamps on, and... I started working there. I think I used to get about £4.50 a week.
You just acted as a farm labourer?
Yes. Well, I went there to work on his garden first, and then it continued on to, you know, working with him and his daughter.
And what kind of work were you doing in the field, so?
For the first part, I used to do just go out with one of the older men. And we'd do ditching and what we call that, digging out ditches, hedging, cutting hedges, and then at harvest time we'd go harvesting, and used to be stooking corn, you know how they used to have stooks of corn years ago. And then eventually you'd go on to helping with the stacking the corn and all that sort of thing. Driving horse and carts, because they used to have horses, you'd have a horse and cart and go and get loads of corn, take it up for the men to stack. You'd also go out and cut cow for the cattle, because they used to feed the cattle on cow, or mango pulling, that sort of thing. You used to pull mangoes, because you used to have fields of mangoes that they gave to the cattle. They used to chop them up and feed the cattle on them, cattle feed, instead of using this poison stuff I use today.
Was it hard work? It sounds hard.
Yes, it was very hard work. The winter was the worst, because the summer was all right, because it was warm, and but in the winter it was really hard work. It was cold, and you'd get frosty, very frosty, and you'd have to go out and work in ditches which were full of water, or not full of water, but water in them and mud. There was the farmyards always seemed to be running full of mud, you know, tub of mud and that sort of thing. That's probably what made me join the Navy eventually.
And you were doing this from 1940 till?
Till 1940, till I joined up, yeah. And
What about rationing? Tell us about food rationing.
Rationing, yes, I remember rationing. From the farm we used to get extra cheese, because you worked on a farm. And the farmer used to issue that to you, which was a great help, really, because it used to help the whole family. because my sisters were, three of my sisters were much younger than I was, but they were stepsisters. And
how did your mum cope with the rationing?
She seemed to cope quite well. We used to be able to subsidise, that used to be help with, we used to be able to have rabbits and that sort of thing, which we could no longer eat because of this myxomatosis, but we used to always have rabbits. There were always rabbit stews and rabbit pies, and I think we lived on rabbit stews, rabbit pies, and the farm stuff, you used to be able to buy our potatoes for about, very cheaply anyway, Swedes and that sort of thing. I think I lived on sweet potatoes and rabbit pies and rabbit stews, you know. That was our staple diet through the war. To go to work, we normally had the bread and cheese. That was it, you know.
Now, how about clothing rationing? Did that affect you much?
No, it didn't affect us to the point that we couldn't afford to buy a lot of clothes anyway, because the wages were quite low at that time, very low.
Now, what did you do for recreations, you know, because you're getting to be a little bit 15, 16, 17. What would you do in the evening?
Well, we used to go around like they have today, they have like sleepovers, but we used to go around and play with the boy next door. We'd go around there and play different things, snakes and ladders.
No, I mean, when you get to be a young man, I mean, 15, what? 16.
Oh, then. Well, we used to go up to Brentwood and go to the cinema, and we could go into the cinema. We used to get a Saturday with sixpence to go into the cinema. So, and we used to go up there, go to the pictures and see most of the cowboy films, which we had quite a lot of then. And if they had an X film, which we'd like to see, we used to hang around until we could find someone who would take us in with them, you know, an adult to get into the underage one. Quite a few of us used to do that.
You were underage, but would you go to pubs? Did you drink before you joined?
No, I never did any underage drinking. That would probably come after I joined the Navy, I think.
Now, how did you come to join, unless there's anything else about you, how did you come to join the Navy?
Well, right out of the blue, I decided one day, I don't know how I came to the decision, but one day I just, I was out, I went into Romford, like one used to do. I was just 17, I think. No, I wasn't 17, before I was 17. I went into Romford one morning, and I don't know, I just wandered off down to the drill hall at Romford and joined up. On the way there, I met this policeman and asked him where the drill hall was at Romford, London Road, Romford. I remember him turning around at me and saying, well, what do you want the drill hall for? So I said, well, I'm going to join the Navy. And it was just out of the blue I did this. And he says, you want to go back to school, young man? And I said, well, I've left school. I probably didn't look very old. I was about 5'3" then, I suppose. And I'm not much taller now, I'm 5'5½" now. But he said to me, you want to go back home? He said, you don't want to go and get yourself into that sort of thing. Anyway, he could see I wasn't going to be put off. So he pointed out the drill hall to me where it was up the road, and I wandered off up there, went in. And I remember seeing the chappie there and saying to him, I've come to join the Navy. Oh, have you? So he says, how long do you want to join for? I said, well, I'm not sure. So I said, well, what shall we say, hostilities only? Which is what I did. And I said, oh, yes, that'll do. No, just went and did this. And then in December, I went home.
When was this then?
Pardon?
What month would it be?
That would be about September 43. Just before I was 17, that's right.
So then you went back home?
I went back home, told my mother what I'd done.
And what did she say?
She wasn't very pleased.
What did she say?
She thought I'd gone off my rocker, I believe. She said that that was a stupid thing to do. You can get killed, you know, in war. And that didn't register to me at all. I mean, to me, I just joined the Navy. She said, there you are, son. She said, you've made your bed, you'll have to lie on it. You've done it now, and there's nothing I can do about it. She says, you're old enough to know what you want to do. So I just, anyway, I waited, and I thought, oh, they forgot about me. And then suddenly I got this letter in December. Earlier, first week in December, I think it was early, yeah, it must have been early December. Telling me to report to the drill hall, Romford, for medical. I went there and we passed, I think it went through about 8 different cubicles, different doctors, testing your feet, your ears, your eyes, your nose, grabbing your testicles, telling you to cough, all these sort of things, right through the lot. Anyway, I came out the other end and I was told that I'd passed A1 and I would be hearing. And on the, I suppose about 6th or 7th of December, I got a letter that said to report to Collingwood Barracks. Inside was a travel warrant telling me to report to Collingwood for training as a seaman.